Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
The Boston Celtics podcast here on the Athletic Podcast Network. I'm your host, Sam Jam Packard, professional sports fan, and I am joined, as always, by the kid, the god, the legend himself, Celtics beat reporter from the Athletic, Jay King, ladies and gentlemen. And Jay is coming to us live from America's most bustling city, one of America's most exciting cities. That's right, Jay is in downtown Salt Lake City, Utah, as he prepares for the Celtics to go on a five-game West Coast swing. But let's not get ahead of ourselves. The Celtics did play and won a basketball game last night against the Philadelphia 76ers, 88-87. And Jay, was that the ugliest basketball game you've ever seen in person?
It was not the most beautiful basketball I've ever seen.
Oh, no, it was terrible.
It was... But if you like defense, if you like net repairs, you like, I don't know what else. It was pretty.
Game-saving blocks?
Game-saving blocks. There was a game-saving block. I struggle to think of an uglier game the Celtics have won while I've been covering the team. But I think that's also a good thing in some ways. That was the worst offensive rating they'd had in a win since January 6, 2018, I think. Yikes. And that was the year, of course, they went to the Eastern Conference Finals because their defense is awesome. And because they had a lot of young guys who could play. And because they had Al Horford. So maybe you should start thinking about the Eastern Conference Finals, Packard.
Believe me, I'm thinking about them. The thing is, like, that this is like Celtics fans, I think, should expect a lot more ugly basketball, because I think that is the formula for the Celtics. They have a very strong defensive team, and they are not great on the offensive end. And Jason Tatum, although had a decent, I guess, performance just in terms of scoring the basketball, 26 points. Crazy amount of rebounds, although he was stealing most of those from Robert Williams, as he admitted after the game. But just like not a lot of other sources of offense. Dennis Schroeder did not have a great game, although kind of mixed results late. It was kind of an ugly game, and it's just like that is what the Celtics are. They are a ugly, grinded out team that's going to have to win games on the defensive end. And they did the job on defense. Ime went double bigs pretty much the entire game, except for like the final 5 minutes. And it held Joel Embiid to only 13 points.
We've got to talk about the Cantor Horford pairing, because you can sell me on Horford and Robert Williams.
Horford and Robert Williams worked.
They're athletic enough. That you're going to have an awesome defense with those two guys as your power forward and center. I'm just not so sure about the Cantor Horford. Just not so sure at all. But obviously they're sold about what Enes Kanter did while Robert Williams was out.
Whoa. The name's Freedom.
Yeah, my bad. Freedom. What Freedom? Well, he was Enes Kanter at that time, to be fair.
What are you talking about? He was Kanter last night.
I mean, he was Freedom last night.
Oh, yes.
While Robert Williams was out, he was Enes Kanter. Now he's Enes Kanter Freedom. And now he's playing with Al Horford. Like, I just don't understand. If you're trying to find any offensive spacer, if you're trying to have a flexible defense, I just don't think the Kanter Horford duo is the way to go. That said, I do think Kanter or Freedom deserves minutes. And that's going to be something Udoka has to figure out. Like, how do you get all three of those guys minutes without having too much clunky basketball because you've got two centers playing at the same time?
Yeah, and the offensive end, it just really doesn't work. Like, with Robert and Horford out there, Al can step out to the perimeter a bit. He knocked down some threes. He was 2 of 3. But then you saw Robert Williams as the constant lob threat. Let me tell you, Enes Freedom's not going up and getting that basketball. He's just not jumping. He was pretty awful. He smoked a number of bunnies. I didn't know Freedom was for bunny smoking, but that's why we live in the great country that we do. Because you're free to smoke as many bunnies you want. But
you're going to make so many dumb Freedom jokes.
Not just me. They're out there. Like, it's not even my fault. It's not like I'm going out of my way to do that. When you change your name to Freedom, the dumb jokes are going to come. Like, it's just, how can you not?
I mean, you just don't have to succumb to that pressure.
I literally cannot do that. If you name yourself Freedom and I'm just easily able to tweet like Embiid hates Freedom, it's just like I'm in Twitter for the jokes, if nothing else. And that one's just too easy.
Embiid liked the Freedom. He broke out a stupid Freedom joke last night too.
There's going to be stupid Freedom jokes for the rest of the year, I think, especially if he keeps getting playing time. I was like surprised to see him get 17 minutes a game. I think that like the interesting part about this game is that the Celtics were finally healthy, only in terms of the fact that they were like had all their guys who were willing to play. I'm like a little bit skeptical of whether or not Jalen and Dennis are actually fully healthy, but we saw Enes get 17 minutes a game. We saw no Romeo Langford, no Jabari Parker. I meant Aaron Nesmith, no Peyton Pritchard, a much shorter rotation from Ime. And the bench really kind of was bad in this game. The Celtics got up a big lead in the first quarter, and then the bench came in and kind of really threw it away. I thought that Jason Tatum and the bench lineups were bad at the end of the first quarter and bad at the end of the third quarter. So it wasn't the best showing for a fully healthy roster, but I just don't know maybe playing Enes had something to do with that. What'd you think of like how the bench performed and kind of their full bench role?
Yeah, I think, well, first of all, if you're going to play Kanter and or Freedom and Horford together, then, and you're going to play them with Dennis Schroeder, there's just not enough space for him. He's a guy who loves to get to the paint and has an easier time doing that when they're shooting around him. And it just makes things tough when you've got two guys like that. And granted, like, Philly's a different matchup because Joel Embiid's on that team and Andre Drummond, who's enormous. And
did he eat someone?
Offensive rebound threat.
Did Andre Drummond gain 40 pounds since the last time I've seen Andre Drummond, or is he just like not paying attention?
He's huge.
Good.
He's pretty big. He's a big man. So that might not be something that they go to all the time. It might have been a matchup thing where Udoka just thought, okay, we can play these guys against Philly because one, they have huge dudes, and two, they don't have a ton of like nifty creators that you're going to be worried about
Freedom chasing around or Horford chasing around at the four or whatever the case. But I think the bench, like, they've got to figure out what to do with the bench, because it seems like they play a whole lot of lineups that just have no prayer of scoring, no prayer whatsoever. And maybe that's the player's fault. Like, maybe it's Peyton Pritchard and Aaron Nesmith's fault that they didn't play well enough for, or they haven't played well enough for Ime to feel comfortable putting more shooting on the court. But I just feel like a lot of the times the lineups they put out there, it's like, how could you possibly score with that group on the court? And it feels to the credit, like, they have been great defensively. They have been awesome defensively. And you look at all the issues they've had, and they're 12-10. They're a couple games out, I think, of second place, although everyone's jumbled in the East. But they've at least, like, stayed in the pack while going through a lot. Like, Tatum stinks compared to his normal standard. Obviously, he doesn't actually stink. He's very impactful even when he's not shooting well. But Jaylen's been out for a long time. Like, a lot has gone wrong for this team, but that defense has been awesome. And they're physical and they're tough and they keep doing it no matter how few points they score, which is impressive. Like,
it's impressive how little they actually score. They had so many opportunities to just kind of, like, because they were getting stop after stop after stop, to just, like, build a lead, and they didn't do it. But you're right, the defense is pretty solid. I mean, anytime you can hold Joel Embiid to, like, 3 of 17, Tobias Harris, one of the most fraudulent players in the league, only had 8 points, a down game from Maxey. I just thought, like, everyone, like, Shake Milton had a little run in the first quarter, but then otherwise didn't do anything. My man Georges Niang, I thought, was did some good stuff. And one of the quickest releases in the league I've seen in a while. But you're right, the defense was phenomenal. It just felt like the offense was struggled. And normally I think the offense struggles when Tatum goes to the bench. But to me right now, it feels like Marcus Smart is the best kind of, like, creator of offense. He had 8 assists last night. Just in terms of, like, creating looks for his teammates, it feels like it's not like they have great offense right now. But it feels like they don't have a lot of creators when Marcus Smart's on the bench. And like, him just being a very solid pro, like, I don't think his shooting numbers have been there, but he's, like, the type of guy where it's just, he's the guy who's going to attack. He's the guy who's going to create something for the team on offense. And when he's on the bench, no one else is really doing that.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like he gets them organized too. Like, they're a lot more organized when Marcus Smart is running the show. I feel like he's played really well. And then the other takeaway I had from that game specifically, like, last year, Tyce Thompson, Robert Williams, like, jumping at pump fakes left and right. The Celtics had no chance, zero chance of slowing down Joel Embiid. He absolutely mutilated them last season. He averaged close to 40 points per game. I think it was 38.3. I think Philadelphia won all of those matchups. And it was just, there was nothing they could do with Joel Embiid. For parts of last night's game, Joel Embiid wasn't even a big factor. The Celtics defense, first of all, having Al Horford to play him is huge. Enes Kanter is, for all his defensive flaws, not a bad post defender, especially.
That's the one thing he can do. He doesn't have to move his feet. He just needs to be large.
Yeah. And then with the double big lineup, to have Robert Williams on the weak side, it's just neat, you know. I think the Celtics tried that last year against Jokic, didn't they? Where they had Grant Williams with Jokic, so that Robert Williams could roam from the weak side and create havoc.
Robert did a great job, I think, Embiid just closing late, like having kind of that late double and just getting a hand up and jump, like, Embiid was not really getting to the rim. And I thought the defense there, where late in the shot clock, Robert could just leave his guy and kind of, like, because they're giving Embiid a lot of attention, as they should with the kind of the Sixers lineup. But I thought it was pretty dynamic in what they could do. And just like being able to switch back and forth between sometimes Robert on Embiid, sometimes Horford on Tobias. Like, it was just a pretty like dope defensive lineup just to watch them work. Cause I thought they were like doing cool things just by slowing down Embiid.
Yeah. And then the video of Jalen fronting Embiid.
That was wild.
While Dennis Schroeder was basically just playing like double teaming Embiid off ball, basically just totally left his own man. And was
I'm sure his man was Matisse Thybulle at that point, because they were completely abandoning him.
They were completely abandoning him. But I thought the video angle of that from NBC Sports Boston was perfect to show how the Celtics were playing and how much goes into slowing down Joel Embiid. Like, and Jaylen Brown was working his ass off to stay in front. And then Schroeder had to be on the backside help so that they still couldn't get an angle to throw to Embiid, whether it was a lob, a bounce pass, whatever. And just the willingness to outright leave Schroeder's man wide open was incredible. And then just the Celtics' commitment to following the game plan. And like, you make a mistake against Embiid, he punishes you. He did not score a bucket at the rim last night. I think,
which is wild.
0-for-4 at the rim. Three of those were either blocked or stripped. It was, from that perspective, like a perfect defensive performance from the Celtics. And then let's talk about the last play, because that was another like incredible defensive sequence from them. And that's why. Like, some ugly wins are better than others. When you hold Joel Embiid to 3-for-17 and then clamp down on the final possession of a game against a very good team like the 76ers when Embiid's healthy, like, that's a good win. And that last possession was like picture perfect. Al Horford pressures the hell out of Tobias Harris.
That was amazing.
Like, Al Horford is 30, in his mid-30s, he's really a center at this stage, although he plays some power forward. He's out there guarding the premier scoring threat for the 76ers after switching on to him. Like, a couple of possessions after switching on to Seth Curry and forcing a turnover when Seth Curry stepped on the baseline, he's hounding Tobias Harris, takes away the angle for an entry pass, doesn't allow the easy entry pass, which is what the 76ers were looking for. And then Robert Williams, somehow on the weak side.
He started on the inbounder. Robert Williams is defending the inbounder on that play.
Follows Niang over to the corner. Like, this goes to show Robert Williams' development, because you put him on a shooter last year. You put him on a shooter maybe even like 2 months ago, and he's abandoning that shooter. And that shooter is probably going to get a wide open three to beat the Celtics at the shot clock buzzer. But Robert Williams played it perfectly. He helped on Embiid a little bit. He was close to Embiid. And then as soon as the ball was going toward Niang, he closed out and recovered like very few athletes in this world can, and blocked the shot. But like, for a center to be guarding a knockdown shooter like Niang and first guard the inbound pass, then help to prevent the entry pass for Embiid, and then get out to Niang without getting lost, without overhelping, it was just an awesome, awesome possession by the Celtics defense and by the two bigs, who everyone wondered whether they can play together. But the Celtics have been great with them on the court, especially defensively. Like, they are a dynamite. They have been a dynamite defensive duo.
That was my question, and I looked foolish when I tweeted it out. And then I made to look smart when Rob had the block. But do you think the Celtics should be closing with Robert Williams on the court instead of Dennis Schroeder? Like, Dennis had clearly had the clutch bucket late, where he kind of had that pick and roll with Horford and Embiid got pulled out of the paint and he made that kind of go-ahead bucket. But then he had an awful possession to kind of lead to a turnover to give the Sixers a chance. And then Robert Williams comes in for the final possession and the Celtics defense is kind of ratcheted up. Like, I think ideally the Celtics offense is better with Dennis on the court and just only one big, but the Celtics offense has been bad. So why not just put your best defensive team out there and just like grind out games?
Yeah, that's interesting. And that, I do think at some point Udoka might have to consider that lineup as a closing lineup. But almost everyone in the league just goes really small in crunch time.
That's why you got to zag. Everyone else is zigging. You got to zag.
And I like Horford has been ridiculous defensively. And the way he's been at the four, the way he's been able to switch on the guards, the way he's been able to hold up against basically anyone from
Joel Embiid. A small team been able to punish the Celtics for having like double bigs yet? Like, I don't remember a game in which someone's gone super small against them and it's really hurt the Celtics on either end.
Yeah, no. I can't remember a game when they got roasted either. And I mean, Horford deserves a lot of credit for that, but also Robert Williams, like they're using him in different ways sometimes. And he's not always guarding big men. He's not always going to be at the rim. And I just think he's done a really pretty mature job of handling that and adjusting to those responsibilities and proving that he's versatile too. Because we knew that Horford has a lot of versatility, but Williams is kind of expanding his game in that front. And for him to guard, like, the Sixers, they're not – a small team, but like Tobias Harris is their four. He's a guy who can put the ball on the floor. He can shoot. And so that's a matchup that theoretically could have caused issues for the Celtics big lineup. And it didn't, not at all. They were able to shut down the 76ers all game. And the last possession, they just clamped. And it was mostly because of the two big guys.
The one last thing I want to get to before, we open it up to the listeners who can join us on stage. We're on the Athletic Live app, and so we are always happy to have the listeners come and ask us questions. It's probably the most fun part of the show. Before we get to that, do you think Jaylen Brown should be playing games right now? Because that was another thing that stood out to me. He just does not have the kind of juice or the explosion that you kind of need to for him to be the most effective. It's just like he had that amazing play fronting Embiid, and he did a pretty damn good job when he was put in that situation. But just on fast breaks, where normally he's one of the best players in the league, he just didn't have it, and he kind of just looked hobbled for the entire game.
Yeah, I think it's pretty clear he's not moving the way he normally does. I think it's pretty clear that he's in pain while he's on the court. I don't understand the way they've handled this injury. A lot of the times with injuries, like I think there's a lot of gray area. Guys can play through stuff. It's, but this one, like
with a hamstring, it doesn't make sense to play through. That feels like something you want to like rest. But I'm not a doctor. I just play one on Twitter.
And he's been listed as questionable every game. He's clearly like had moments of wincing
at and least limping
during every game. And he played, I think, 30 something minutes yesterday. So yeah, I agree. It's probably time for him to sit at least for a little while. You don't have to sit him forever. Like he's proven he can at least play minutes and be reasonably effective, but I just don't get this early in the season pushing him to the point that they have. And obviously it would be a bad time to sit him and to rest him and to get him healthy with a 5-game road trip about to start. But his long-term health is far more important than whatever happens in Utah or Portland over the next couple of nights. So I do think they need to take the decision out of his hands and just say, Jaylen, we're going to give you another week or whatever it is, however much time that he needs, so that he's not in obvious discomfort and obviously held back while he's on the court.
Yeah, they got a couple back-to-backs coming up, and I just don't think it makes sense to have him go for both of them. We'll talk about the West Coast trip a little bit later, but right now I want to go to the listeners, Andrew DK, who's been waiting patiently. Andrew, how's it going?
Pretty good. Thanks for you guys taking the time to do this. It's always interesting to hear the insights after a tough game like that. My question is, as far as, like, you know, a lot of the teams in the East, they're kind of have similar records. You know, everyone's been struggling along, it looks like, from their records. As a barometer, like, how would you say this game makes the Celtics, like, kind of evaluate where they are? You know, given Embiid was out for 3 weeks with COVID, he looked like, you know, he didn't look like last year Embiid. And Simmons wasn't playing, who's, you know, obviously everybody knows he's been out. Given that, how do you guys feel about, you know, what the rest of the season or the next quarter of the season looks for the Celtics after this game?
It's a good question.
Yeah. I think that one game didn't change what I thought about the Celtics or what I think about the Eastern Conference hierarchy. To me, it's the Nets, it's the Bucks in one tier, it's the Bulls, it's the Heat in a second tier.
Oh, wow. The Wizards disrespect right now.
Yeah, the Wizards are not in either of those tiers. They're with everybody else in a third tier. When I think the Celtics are in that third tier, if they figure things out offensively, then things can change. And they don't have to be like a top five offense. If they get just a respectable offense, their defense is good enough, they'll be in every game. And they'll have Tatum and Brown closing every game. And like that seems like a decent formula, but they have to figure out the offense. And until they do, then they're going to win grimy. They're going to lose grimy. They're going to hover somewhat around 500. Their offense has just been so bad. Just so bad.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's really hard to figure out anything about the Eastern Conference. Like that one win against the Sixers, I don't know what it can tell you. I mean, Andrew mentioned the Embiid's coming back from COVID. Obviously, he was not like that dominant, but I feel like at this point, pretty much 1 through 13, anyone can win a basketball game in the Eastern Conference. Like the pace, like, if the Celtics lost to the Pacers, it just wouldn't shock me. And if the Celtics beat the Nets on a random game, I think it would be impressive because the Nets clearly have some elite talent. But just like the East is completely jumbled up. And like the Hornets played a pretty damn close game with the Bucks last night. And like I think the Bucks are ultimately a much better team than the Hornets. But especially in early season basketball, I don't know like what you can really – take away from any of these games. And that's why the teams are so jumbled. I think it's just impossible to really figure it out. I would agree with you that it's Nets and Bucks. Like the Bucks have won 8 of their last 10 games. Like they are doing much better now they like are more healthy. But after that, I don't even know if there's a tier. Like the Heat just lost Bam for a couple weeks. The Bulls have Vucevic coming back, which I think will hurt them, which is my bold take. But then it's just a hodgepodge of randomness. And like, I have no idea what to take from the Celtics in any of these individual games. You just kind of hope that over this next month, they play 15 games. They are, I guess they're 1-0 in December right now, but it's a pretty tough schedule, including this West Coast trip. I think if they win 9 of those games, if they go 9-6, I think that's like a pretty successful month, just because one is a tough schedule and two, it's just like teams are pretty much bunched up around 500 in the Eastern Conference. Like everyone seems to be pretty even this year, and it's going to be really hard. Like I'd be shocked if anyone other than the Nets and the Bucks really created separation in the Eastern Conference at this point.
Wizards disrespect, huh?
Oh, well, yeah, I was going to disrespect him too. I don't believe in the Wizards either. I was just joking.
Yeah, I think this month will tell us a lot about the Celtics.
I think this road trip coming up, this like 5-game road trip, like it will tell us a lot about kind of the toughness of this team. And it's like a kind of a big swing. They have 5 pretty tough opponents. They're playing the Suns and the Jazz.
They'll play the Lakers without LeBron.
And they might play the Suns without Booker, depending on
without Lillard. Yeah.
Oh wow! I didn't realize Dame's not playing. In that case, they should win at least 3 of these games.
All of a sudden, it's must-win games everywhere.
Well, it's in the Eastern Conference. Every game's a must-win game, but they're playing the Jazz and the Suns, who are like 2 of the top 5 teams in the league. The Clippers have been solid. Like it's going to be 2 back-to-back games, I believe. Although the one in LA, they don't really have to go anywhere, so that's like shouldn't be too bad. But it's going to be interesting.
I will be chilling out in LA.
The kid, Hollywood King, is probably one of the best forms of Jay King. West Coast King is a fun Jay King. If any of you guys are out on the West Coast, I would go track him down, hit him up. It'll be a good time. Right now, we're going to go to celebrity caller June.
Long time listener, long time caller.
June, how are you doing?
Good. How are you guys?
Doing good.
Yeah, I just wanted to talk about the point that Sam, you brought up about the closing lineup and how the offense is ugly. Like assuming you close with one big, it looks like the closing lineup is going to be Schroeder, Smart, the Jays, and choose a big between Al or Rob. And obviously when you play Smart and Schroeder together, the offense are going to have moments that are just ugly because the shooting isn't there. So on that note, do you think that like Romeo or Grant should ever be closing games just for some spacing purposes? And if not, and it doesn't look like that's really the case on most occasions because like Schroeder and Smart are just, I mean, they're just better. Right. And if that's the case, like, are they just going to close games like that the rest of the year? Or do you think they should just essentially make a move for a Schroeder who's on Schroeder or Smart's level that is good enough to basically close games and sit one of them?
Yeah, I think your question kind of explained the bind who Udoka's in. You were talking about putting more spacing on the court.
That Grant and Romeo are not going to help out because no one's going to guard them. No,
and they have been shooting well, but like teams still don't care.
Teams will welcome Grant Williams being in the corner, although he's the corner master.
He is the corner master these days.
Teams would welcome that shot 1,000 times out of 1,000. And so there is a big buy-in because there's no real obvious option about like what to do to open up the offense there.
Yeah. And there's just like if they had a professional shooter who could hold up defensively,
Naismith.
if his name was Aaron.
If they had Aaron Naismith on the roster, if only.
Yeah, if only they had Aaron Naismith. But like somebody in that mold to really provide spacing and not just like the percentages, whatever Grant's shooting, whatever Romeo's shooting, I know it's very good.
Someone that like other teams will respect as a shooter, maybe a George's Niang type, maybe a guy
or someone you could put in the action, and teams are petrified to leave. You know, like Seth Curry. Seth Curry, you can't leave.
Well, yeah, you're talking about one of the best shooters in the league. Steph Curry out there, the offense would be a lot better.
Seth.
I'm saying, I know, I was making fun of it.
Both Curry would look okay in Boston. But yeah, I just think Udoka is kind of limited by his options. And I do think from the sound of it, he is very committed to closing games with those four guys, Schroeder, Smart, Tatum, Brown, and whatever big. And he thinks the Celtics have to figure out how to play with those guys on the court. And I think some of it is just like learning actions that work best. Like, felt like sometimes they try too hard to get Schroeder going or try too hard to get Schroeder a decent matchup. Sometimes they don't utilize Tatum's.
It's entirely too much Dennis. And that's the thing that, like maybe you want to get a guy who's a shooter out there, but I think I was talking about earlier in the episode, why not just go full defense? Go double big. Like, I think one of the downfalls of having that lineup is the ball, like, in order to get Dennis to be most effective, the ball needs to be in Dennis's hand, and then you don't have Tatum with the ball in crunch time, and that feels like you want the ball in the best hands, like, or in the player – in the hands of your best player. Wow. And so I just don't know if Dennis and Tatum really like work together. It's not like when Dennis has the ball, they're running a lot of off ball action to get Tatum, like catching the ball in the catch or creating space for Tatum. It feels like when Dennis has the ball in the clutch, it's the Dennis show. And we've seen games like against the Bucks. It was pretty good. Even last night, he had some good plays, but then you also saw the bad of Dennis. I'm advocating just like a full Zag. I know like the spacing would suffer, but Rob is kind of a security blanket on offense where there's a lot of like bailout, just throw the ball up and like maybe Rob can get a nice easy lob dunk. Like he had a number, I think 3 lobs last night. He does. It's not like he just spaces the way differently. He provides what some experts might call vertical spacing. And so I just don't like, The numbers without those four you mentioned, the four kind of smaller guys, have not been good. I understand why the Ime keeps trying it, but eventually they're going to have to try something different because it's just not currently working like those four smaller guys and then one big. But
on a more important note, I feel like June brings the goods every time he asks a question.
That's why he's a celebrity caller. June comes with the heat.
June comes in out and questions? Just asks a fucking great question every single time. June is Mr. Consistent. June is an all-time caller.
I would say top caller right now. Someone has to bump him off his spot. Maybe it'll be, I don't know how to pronounce your name, so correct me if I'm wrong. I want to say Avon or Evan C.
Just Evan.
Just Evan? Did you just like not E-A-V-A-N?
My family's like pretty damn Irish.
Oh, it's an Irish name. Well, Evan, welcome to the program. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks. Was at the game last night for the first time since COVID. Not gonna lie, it was a really fun game to watch, even though it wasn't pretty.
You enjoyed the net repairs, didn't you?
I didn't know what was going on. Like 5 minutes, I just saw the kids playing on one side. But yeah. I have never seen Joel Embiid settle for so many, like, just fadeaways. He didn't even try to go to the basket, I'd say, like, in the third and fourth quarter. So I don't know if it was a great game to really monitor with, but I just feel like if they play Rob and Horford together, and I think that's their best defensive lineup and best lineup together for closing time. And I feel they should play them together in the closing minutes. What did you guys think?
Hey, he's speaking my language. I agree.
Yeah, I agree. Embiid, right, he's probably working through some stuff. When guys are out with COVID, not only are they, in his case, I think he was very sick from what he said, but it's also, you just can't work out. Like, you're sick. You're not playing games. You're not doing your normal workout routine. And so him being a little out of shape, at least a little out of shape, coming back and struggling against two very good defensive big men in Al Horford and Robert Williams. I get that, but I also do think the Celtics' resistance against him this season is far different than it was last week. Like, Tice wasn't going to do anything with Joel Embiid. Tristan Thompson was not going to do a damn thing with Joel Embiid. But Al Horford has always played him well. And Freedom, back when he was Canter, always played him pretty well too. And so the Celtics just have – and they play bigger lineups. So, like, having Robert Williams as your weak side big to come over and double, like, that's just different. It's different from what the Celtics had last season. Although I guess they could have had Robert Williams as a weak side big, but they didn't do that very often. I just think their defense is a lot different, a lot more physical, a lot bigger. And the matchup against Embiid spotlighted that, I felt like.
Yeah. And I think they work together. It's just whether or not, like, they work together in the well in the first quarter. It's just whether or not you trust them as a closing lineup. We haven't really seen it. I think Ime's gone single big pretty much to close every single game. It'll be interesting to see if he kind of like pivots to that at all moving forward. We got McCoy T joining. McCoy is a strong name. How are you doing, McCoy?
What's up, guys? Thanks for having me. Big fan. I had a question for you guys sort of looking forward in the season. A lot of people always like to talk about if teams will be buyers or sellers at the trade deadline and what type of fit would be best. I feel like for the Celtics for the past two or three seasons, everyone's been saying they need a big wing, a power forward off the bench at the trade deadline. I was just wondering with how solid the double big lineup has been and Grant Williams off the bench, if you guys think that would be the best player still. I see a lot of people say like a Thad Young type guy from San Antonio, but just curious what type of role players at the deadline you'd like to see them go after, if any.
Yeah, I've actually changed my mind about that. I used to think that they needed another power forward type two, but number one, Al Horford has done a really good job in that role. I think he's proven that even at his age, he can handle that responsibility. Number two, Grant Williams has been much better. And Grant Williams has done a decent job. He's knocked down shots. He's helped with the defense. He's been solid. He's not fouling as much. I just think the combination of Horford proving he can still do it and Williams proving he's capable, that changes what the Celtics need to me. It's just shooting. It's shooting. It's like if they could get a shooter who could run around screen, like really freaking move off the ball and just draw attention. Like a young JJ Redick type. And obviously those guys are really, really tough to find. And obviously they probably won't get someone of that caliber. But this team just needs more shooting. They need someone to make the game easier for Tatum, for Brown. They need someone to open up the court for Schroeder to make it easier to run lob plays for Robert Williams. I just think one knockdown shooter would go very far for this Celtics team.
Yeah, I think they have to have the best shooter available, but I think everyone is looking for shooting. And it's just like, I don't know what necessarily, like, who's going to be available for trade, because most teams that are in it, and that's another thing with all the parity in the Eastern Conference and Western Conference and the play-in game, I think a lot of teams are not necessarily going to be sellers at the deadline. The first name that popped into my mind was just like a shooter who may be available is Eric Gordon. He's not really like the runaround screens type. He's a little bit older, but he's still shooting over 40% from three this year. I think they got to add shooting. I just don't know like necessarily where that comes from. There's not a lot of obvious guys out there. And it's just like odd to me to like, they kind of have guys who can shoot on the bench, like Payton Pritchard and Aaron Nesmith, although they haven't been good this year, hypothetically, like they're pretty solid 3-point shooters. And especially Payton Pritchard can shoot from deep. I just don't know. Like, I have no idea what's going to happen with the trade deadline, but they do seem to like have options. They're just not options that Ime is really willing to use. I don't know if they have a kind of an ability right now to acquire a guy who's like definitively would, if like as soon as you trade for him, he's in your top eight players in the rotation. I just don't know if that type of guy is available.
Yeah. I mean, that's fair. Every team needs shooting. always. No matter how much shooting you have, every team wants more. So, yeah, it's going to be tough to find. Especially it's going to be tough to find because you can go out there and pick up a shooter, but a shooter who holds up defensively that you can keep him on the court and play him in playoff minutes. Like I remember when the 76ers picked up like Marco Bellinelli and shit back in the day. Like Marco Bellinelli could shoot that thing.
The Celtics really attacked him on every possession.
He made a huge, huge, huge difference for that Philadelphia offense for however long he was there. The Celtics were relentless as soon as he got to the playoffs. Just bum hunted him the whole
time. Bum hunted him.
And then, yeah. I wanted, by the way, to make the 76ers are hunting freedom line.
But thank you for refraining.
They didn't do too much hunting. And yeah, I'm against freedom jokes now.
Well, freedom against 76ers, which get its name from the Constitution, or I guess the Declaration of Independence. Most people forget that. Constitution wasn't signed till 1789, folks. Most people don't remember their colonial American history.
Yeah, that's true.
Is colonial American history potable, Jake King?
I really don't think it is.
Anything is possible! Seriously, dog, you want to talk about the election of 1800? Wild stuff. Wild stuff.
No, thank you.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll talk to you next week.